Welcome to What Comes Next Live. I'm your host, Tom McCallum. I'm passionate about open leadership and write about leadership daily at tommccallum.com. Open leaders have core qualities that drive them, four of which are to be brave, be hungry, be open, and be humble. I'm always inspired by listening to the thoughts of leaders I meet, which led to the idea for this show, where our guest first shares a little about themselves, what they're doing, and their thoughts on what comes next. And through that, we'll typically bring out some useful insights for our audience, which you can pick up for yourselves as we go. Today's guest is Catherine Sheridan. And Catherine, there's two words about you that come to mind. One is authentic and the other is sustainability. And with that, tell us about yourself, what you're up to, and what your thoughts are.
Thanks, Tom, for the great introduction. I moved to Paris when I was 19, and that basically showed me that there was another way of life outside of the UK. And while I went back to the UK to finish my studies, I've basically been abroad ever since. I've been in Belgium for the last 20 years, and I started out as a journalist, which, when you mentioned authenticity and sustainability, that's where I started already to sort of hone my journalistic instincts and my editorial instincts. And then I moved from journalism into communications. And after having done PR for some people that I didn't really want to be doing PR for, 12 years ago, I set up my own sustainability communications firm in 2008, which everybody said was a terrible time to start a business. But compared to where we are today, I don't think it was so bad. So I spent my 30s working because that was what society had told me I was supposed to do. It's kind of trained to work myself nearly to death in my 30s, because that's kind of the plan. And when I hit 40, I moved out of Brussels, where I had actually been living in the office. We had a house and it was divided between my place and the office. So it was very intense. And I moved out to the countryside in Flanders, in Belgium. And since then, since that 40th milestone, it's been a process of really transitioning and reevaluating, you know, what I want to do with my life. And it ended up last year, well, I took a sabbatical for a year, and then I'd been back a couple of years after that during this whole, you know, reevaluating, transitioning period. And yeah, last year I decided that it wasn't what I wanted to do anymore, and I scaled back the company and I closed the office and let go, you know, what was left of the team. And I still keep going with the work because there's a lot of interesting projects that I have. You know, I'm doing some brilliant consulting projects, but it's scaled back to a size where I'm happy and where I feel like I'm doing the work that I need to do. And it's funny, Tom, because in my 30s, I absolutely thrived on that business and the team and the office and had a real family feeling. It just took me some time in my 40s to get to that point where I could really admit for myself and really be honest to myself that this wasn't working for me anymore. And I'm all about honesty. It comes all the way through my work. I mean, communicating on sustainability is about honesty and authenticity. And so what I think about good leadership, and I know we're going to talk more about that later on, but that authenticity has to also come through in how we lead. So I think of myself as a kind of human lie detector. I have this journalistic filter radar for credibility. And for companies that work with me, that's very much in their favor, because they can hire the human lie detector to review their credibility, help them to build thought leadership. And reputation is everything these days. So I can, you know, identify where there is risk and I can help them to do better. So it's anti-greenwashing. It's absolutely the opposite of greenwashing. I'll show them where their risks and their vulnerabilities are and help them make it better. That's the kind of credibility work in a nutshell, and the thought leadership. But basically, I just want to see more honesty in sustainability. And where I am now, where I am this year, I've been in a learning phase. So I've also been working on really opening myself up to new inputs. And I've been studying various different things around psychology and coaching, and also our relationship to the earth through eco-psychology. And now it's all in the pot, and I'm just integrating and seeing, you know, where that's going to take me and how I can bring all of that together in a way that's meaningful for people.
Cool. It's a word that has come forward in certain areas the last few years, but probably not that widely understood, is greenwashing. And I'm not sure if I coined it, but I think I'm the first person I heard use it, was purpose washing, because that became the thing that happened in 2019. Mm-hmm. Where people use that in a certain way. But just explain a little bit what you mean by greenwashing.
So, yeah, for people who are not into that. And we also have work washing, which is around the purpose washing theme. Greenwashing is basically when companies and organizations make claims that aren't true. So they might have a product that has maybe one slightly green quality, and they'll dress up the entire thing to look green. Or it will just be a normal product, but it will have a green-themed advertising campaign. I mean, the worst culprits are the industry that I come out of, which is marketing communications, PR, and also next to that, advertising. And I started the business back in 2008 because I saw more and more people trying to communicate about environmental credentials of a product or of their industry. In Brussels, there's a lot of lobbying. There's a lot of industry representation as well as companies. And I mean, I work globally, but I started off in Brussels working with those trade associations. And I think a lot of the time it's well-meaning, but it's a lack of understanding. And we're not all scientists. I'm not a scientist, but I've been in this business so long that I do understand enough about the science and about stakeholder sensitivities. So it's dressing up paint, for example, in an advert with babies and butterflies and trees and saying, well, this is almost good enough to eat. You know, it's that kind of complete nonsense that something is beneficial to the environment. When we look at sustainability, I mean, there is an inherent hypocrisy. Like in the last year or so, I can barely talk about sustainability without talking about hypocrisy as well, because nothing is 100% good.
Right.
It's more complex than that. You can't be 100% sustainable. You know, we have an impact on the earth. So we have to manage that in some way. And honesty and authenticity is only the only way to manage that.
This somehow reminds me, I can't remember the name of the company. You'll know it. They're a Dutch company that makes plastic floor tiles and floor coverings. And Alan Moore, who I worked with for a while, a couple of years ago, was very, very impressed with this company. You know the example, so tell us a little bit about that company, which is obviously not 100% good. It makes plastic floor coverings, but they were looking to do something authentic, I believe.
Yeah, I think you're probably referring to Interface, and they have done a lot, and they've been a real pioneer in sustainability for the last decades. Mm-hmm. And they're taking, if I understand it correctly, they're taking a circular economy approach, which means that the products will be repurposed at the end of life. And that's a big part of the problem, without getting into a completely geeky sustainability conversation, because I think we want to talk about leadership and what's needed next. But we need to look at where the products are coming from and where they're going. You know, and things can be designed with that in mind. And that's why there's so much excitement now around circular economy and the work that Ellen MacArthur has been doing with the Circular Economy Foundation there. So
back to authenticity and the human lie detector. I was talking with a good friend today for quite some time, and we ended up having an hour and a half conversation about trust.
Yeah,
and
I have those a lot.
Neither of us had any real answers for this, but we both work as mentors and coaches to business leaders. And why on earth are so many government leaders, this is not a political conversation, it's a leadership conversation, but why are so many government leaders untrustworthy, particularly in how we're dealing with the pandemic? And when we consider that trust is, there's a writer and academic called Rachel Botsman who wrote a book called Who Do You Trust 3 years ago, and she moved a conversation onto transparency. So an example is the cost of not trusting, and I wonder why that people, you know, don't act authentically and be trustworthy. And I'll ramble for a bit and get your thoughts. But Rachel came up with this thought around transparency, because when we stop trusting banks, et cetera, we now all have risk officers, compliance officers, and it's all regulated, et cetera. We went from trusting banks to not trusting banks overnight in about 2008. And so now transparency is what everything's about, all right? So everything has to be transparent.
But Rachel's example was she was living in Australia with, and her husband and kids would be there a lot. She'd be traveling around the world, speaking at all kinds of places. And when she got back, the first thing her husband did when she got home was to grab her phone, ask for a passcode and check every message she had. And people in the audience would go, no, of course not. She said, well, why not? Well, because he'll trust you. She says, yeah, exactly. Right? Because if he didn't trust me and I was transparent, he could see everything I did, but it would take hours. It was such a waste of time. Whereas if you just trust people, then you act. And so it's a very deep topic, but fundamentally, people don't trust leaders. And there are some, you know, I live in London and I'm Scottish and I'm also from the Cayman Islands. And the leaders in Scotland and in the Cayman Islands through the pandemic was super honest, super clear. And when they didn't get it right, they told people. And I live in London. And this is not about politics. It's about leadership. And frankly, walking around the streets of London every day, it's fairly obvious that nobody trusts the government. There's a huge breakdown in trust. I guess the big conversation is I wonder why. And,
Do you really wonder?
Well, I think there's many levels on this, but if we look at this, and particularly if you flip it back into sustainability, is the issue around, well, we absolutely need to address the climate crisis and we need to be more sustainable. We need more of a circular economy. But we also need businesses to be trusted.
If businesses can be trusted, then yes, but trust has to be earned. Right. And for me, credibility builds trust. And we build credibility through transparency and accountability and authenticity. And we need to stop seeing sustainability as a separate thing. As long as we see sustainability as a separate thing or the circular economy as a separate nice to have thing, we're gonna fry. Like, this is the reality. What comes next is we fry. Maybe in your kid's lifetime, maybe in your grandkids' lifetime, but the planet is uninhabitable. In, you know, we can discuss how many years with different scientists, but it's not too far off that we actually can't live on the planet. So we've gone from sustainability being a nice thing about doing good. Oh, we should do the right thing. Let's put out a nice report. Let's win some awards for our nice report. And let's go to some sustainability conferences. I mean, the last time, it's been ages since I've gone to a corporate sustainability conference because I just want to stick pins in my eyes. Because when I hear the presentations, I'm like, oh, well, we're good then. I can retire. I can go open a bookshop or something because we're good, apparently. If I listen to all these large companies with all of the wonderful things that they're doing and the reports that they're, you know, writing on sustainability and the awards that they're winning, it's a circus. You know, we're not there. So we actually need to scrap sustainability. Sustainability has to be everything because as long as we see it as something separate, we're not getting anywhere. So we're going to fry.
So what does that look like? I mean, who's doing it? Who's doing a good job of it?
People always ask me that, and I actually won't answer because nobody is doing a really good job. Okay. People always want, like, oh, this is the perfect example because that's too easy. Mm-hmm. It's actually none of us are particularly sustainable. You know? We need to take responsibility. If we don't want to fry, mm-hmm. This comes back to your question about trust and why don't we trust politicians. On politicians specifically, I think there have been too many compromises for too long. You know, politics is built upon compromise. I've been in Brussels for 20 years. There's always a bit of horse trading, a bit of give or take. And at the end of the day, even a good, decent politician that goes in, they have to make compromises, you know, and that's the nature of the business. And so I think that that does erode how trustworthy, you know, in general, politicians can be. That's my personal opinion, of course. But in terms of business and transparency and accountability, we need to take responsibility. It's not only business.
So on that, transparency, accountability, responsibility were your three words. Building credibility. And another way of saying credibility is what you need to build trust is it's what you do, not what you say you're going to do. Right. The piece I was also ruminating on today with someone was apologies. Mm. Another element of responsibility is to apologize when you got it wrong. And I just saw last night, President Trump being interviewed on HBO, and he just is pathologically unable to admit where he's got it wrong.
I love how we're making this a political conversation.
Well, but I mean, I think that's a broad topic with politicians, and I find if you move that into business leaders, if a business has made a massive misstep on something, there's the difference between the non-apology apology, such as, well, I'm sorry you feel that way. Right. The one which actually goes, there was the guy, I think his name, Randy Pausch, who did the last lecture talk. A guy was dying of a terminal disease and he gave a great lecture. He talked about the three parts of an apology. I'm sorry. What I did was wrong. How can I make it better?
Mm-hmm.
And not perfect by any means, but I did watch the French president, Macron, a couple of months ago, having had a pretty shaky start to handling the pandemic, actually just get on live television and go, we got it wrong. Here's what we're going to do next. And at least for a period of time, that gives a reset. That taking responsibility gives a reset.
It does, but then we're always looking for the other to fix it for us. And so that's one of my things. If we talk about leadership, I believe that we're all leaders.
Okay.
We all have an impact and we should all be apologizing. Or perhaps we can all just look forward to how we can do things better. You know, I really believe that we are powerful.
Mm-hmm.
Our stories are powerful. Mm-hmm. And if we don't want to fry and we want to come out of the pandemic better, then we start taking responsibility on an individual level. I got quite burned out a few years ago after being 20 years in sustainability almost and not seeing much difference. You know, you work on environmental issues for 20 years and things are worse than when you started. It's natural that most of us at some point, we reach a point where we say, well, what's the point? You know, this is a waste of time. And in healing from that and in recovering from that, I was then able to get back to a place where I really believe that I individually have an impact. And it's not because of any kind of platform or influence I might have. I think we all have an influence because everything we do in our own lives has a ripple effect on our community, you know, the kids, the school, the whatever, the fly that will not leave me alone in my studio. It's that ripple effect that then inspires other people to take similar action. So it's not just about waiting for government to make it right, waiting for business to make it right. What is a business or a government or an economy? It's a group of individuals. It's people. You know, if we can just look at this, you know, person to person, what can I do? What can you do? And it won't be the same. Another question people love to ask me that I don't like to answer is, oh, well, what should I be doing?
Hmm.
There are so many resources on the internet. It's like now with the whole anti-racist explosion, which thankfully has now exploded. It's like, don't go to somebody and ask them what you should do. There are so many resources online. Not everything will speak to everybody. For some, they'd be quite happy to take the bike and the train to go to the office. For other people, that's their idea of torture and they'll do something else. They maybe fly less. And it's not for me to tell people what to do. There's so much information out there, but we should all be doing. We all need to do something and start to see life and the place that we live in as a little more sacred. That it's something actually worth protecting, that you want there still to be, you know, a planet and a butterfly there for your kids and your grandkids. And for those of us that don't have kids, that we just don't want to leave the planet, you know, completely destroyed.
Yeah.
It's about survival at this point.
Well, to pivot slightly, rather than, you know, we fry is a very good what comes next.
We fry.
And it's entirely serious. I don't mean to make it frivolous. When you were talking us through some of your story, I most identify with people who are brave. And bravery is in the eye of the beholder. It can be a tiny step. It could be a huge leap. I've also spent a lot of time working with people who own their own business, whether it's a small business or a very large one. And the most classic issue they are dealing with when I'm coaching them is letting go. The ripple effect I am certain you'll be having on some of the people who watch this live or listen to it later is around the fact that you were brave enough to let go of a business you'd built over a course of years. Now, and also the bravery to look at oneself in a transitional space, which is also you were talking about. And you and I first met years ago and had a long conversation late at night in a mountain hut in the middle of winter in the Alps.
Up a mountain.
Thank you, mountain. And we were both in a very deep personal transitional space.
Mm.
So there might be a question or observation coming out of this, but the first thing is, I find your way, how you are, you and I have not spoken for quite a long time, how you're showing up now, inspirational, in that you've bravely taken time out and said, what is it I really need? And it's not the simplest journey in the world, and you're pretty public with it in certain ways with your writing and other things. But you come through that and you go, who am I now? What impact can I have for myself, those I love, those around me, my community? And have that ripple effect. So there's an acknowledgement, it's simply an acknowledgement. And if there's anything you want to share around bravery and self-truth and authenticity, that's great.
Sure. I mean, the business was my life. That was really the conditioning, right? And I loved it and I still love it, but it's a very different business now. And I had to look at where is my value, because I have an impact on an individual level, but I'm also very privileged that I get to work in businesses. And I mean, I work with startups and I work with large global companies in Japan and all over. And so, I mean, I'm lucky to have that position where I can, you know, influence a little bit on the inside, and that they trust me enough to look at what they're doing and be honest with them and point out, you know, the risks and how to do things better. The people that I work with are good, honest people. And I really believe that most people are good, honest people. Most people do not go to work in the morning with a view to making things worse for other people. But this is where, you know, our education has to come in. This is where I'm so appreciating all of the work right now around anti-racism, because as Robin DiAngelo says in White Fragility, white progressives are the hardest to change because we think we're good. Hmm. And I was like, oh, it gives me goosebumps just saying it. That applies so much in sustainability. Oh, but I'm leading a good life. I'm a good person. You know, I'm doing all these things. Yeah, but I need to do other things too. And I need to look at what I'm doing. So it has been quite a challenging period over the last few years, but very enlightening. And I actually think that all of my journey so far has been learning to open. I was always known as very honest and straight talking. That's why I used to get the speaking gigs and the moderating gigs. And I've always written. You mentioned my writing work. I'm a journalist by training, so I've always written and I continue to write. But I really think that it has been learning to just open myself more and let go of some of the ideas of how it should be. Less attachment to what I think it should be and more openness to what comes in and to question what is, basically. And that's the authenticity. That's to be able to say, well, I had this business that was pretty good and I liked it a lot. And, you know, our clients liked it a lot as well. But to be able to step away from that and say, this is not what I need now. It was hard. I hope that with the coaching and mentoring work that I do, I also, you know, help entrepreneurs and people who feel stuck, also people in jobs who want to move into something more meaningful, another job or freelance or whatever. But like just trying to help people connect with that purpose and find something meaningful. We don't want to leave our values at the door, you know, when we go to work. It's not like you walk through the door and then you leave yourself at the door. We need to be able to show up authentically. And that's very relevant for leaders, but it's for everybody. Companies made up of people. We can make change. We need to.
Yeah, we promised not to do any swearing on the show when we were talking before. I sound like an English guy. I went to school in England, but I'm not English. And I lived in the Caribbean, where people are typically really open and warm for most of my adult life. And if I talk to people back there, it says, what's it like living in England? It says, well, the thing about British people is if you shoved a lump of coal up their backside, it would turn into a diamond in a week. They're so tightly wound, right? And this reticence to feel and be open and authentic and bring your whole self to work is another way of putting what you just said.
Yeah, I don't think it's just a British thing. I think it's conditioning. You must not show emotion, and especially the way that boys are raised and that men are treated in society. You may not show emotion. You may not show weakness. Boys don't cry. Man up. Grow a pair. All of that nonsense. Like it's in all of our conditioning. And then the same, a similar conditioning applied to women. It's We need to challenge all of that. And I feel like we're at a time now where we are challenging all of that. And that is what gives me hope. Like, this is not a doom and gloom message from me. I might be a human lie detector, but it's not all about doom and gloom and we're going to fry. Like, I have hope. I really believe that we can change now. When I've seen kids on the streets, even way before Greta, the fact that the American kids were on the streets about gun laws. From that moment on, I had hope. Because I was very much in doom and gloom and compassion fatigue and we're all screwed anyway. Mm. And from that moment, I saw kids on the streets campaigning against gun laws. I really thought things can change. And since then, we've had Greta, we've had all the kids on the streets. Yeah. And now the pandemic, it's an awful time for very many people. It's also giving us the time to reflect on what's important and the opportunities. And also, you know, the impacts of our behavior. We just need to question. I mean, I'm not here preaching that we all have to change and that you must never buy anything online again or anything like that. And that's why I actually don't get into the details of what you can do, because that's really easy to find online what you can do. I think you probably already know. I'm not doing everything I can do. And that's what I said earlier on. There is an inherent hypocrisy. We will do what we can, but we will never do everything we can.
Yeah, a small resource of people, which is new, is I just, as part of the crowdfunding of it, I invested in a new app called Pawprint, and it's a phone app that actually lets you measure your input, your impact at all kinds of levels and do little challenges. It's really about awareness and stuff. So there's, as you say, there are tons of resources. The linking to what I said and your reply, my dissonant feeling was that I found culturally differences in the UK to the Caribbean. And yet when we actually, this is supposed to take responsibility, maybe an element of the human lie detector. Well, there's the bullshit detector and actually just calling out, you know.
I used to call it that.
Call it lies. That's the American phrase. But the other part of it, if you're coaching somebody and you coach people now, is just when people actually open up and say what they're really feeling, not just what they're thinking, but what they're feeling. Because, you know, my belief is that sort of the foundation of modern philosophy of cogito ergo sum, or I think therefore I am, is basically, no, I feel therefore I am. We make our decisions based on how we feel. And nobody's going to, we know people aren't making changes in sustainability because of the rationale. But if you go, what comes next? We fry. Mm-hmm. That's a feeling statement. And if we can really bring our whole selves to work, and if leaders can sometimes go, I'm feeling really shit today. All right. How are you guys doing? Instead of pretending they're all tough all the time, you know?
Well, part of the reason I've moved into coaching and mentoring as well as the consulting work is I realized that was so tied up in my approach as a consultant. Always, I've always had really good relationships with my clients, very close, very sharing. And I do a lot of community work as well, mostly online. And so I have that experience of holding space for people. And I find that because I'm open and vulnerable, others are willing to be open and vulnerable. And so we can create that space to really share. And quite quickly, the real stuff is coming out. And then I thought, so I love that. I really enjoy that. And I find that I'm able to help people also through creating those community spaces and also through the coaching and mentoring type of work. And so I'm bringing it all together, because if you can show up authentically at work, you can make a difference in your company, in your government, in your department. And that's the link between authenticity and sustainability. I talk a lot about credibility, but at the end of the day, I'm talking about showing up. Are you showing up for yourself? Are you showing up for your needs? And are you showing up at work to make a difference?
That's absolutely brilliant. You very eloquently pulled it all together. Could talk for hours about lots of topics. I'm trying to remember. I don't know why I'm blanking on it, but the name of the young crew cut lady on the gun control and the shooting that was after, because I had the same response as you when she did a speech in Washington, and the dramatic part of it was she actually held up her iPhone with a timer on it and let it run for about 5 minutes, and then said that was the length of time that the gunman was in the class, was in the school, firing bullets. And the level of authenticity and genuine anger and wish for change among an 18-year-old. And that was a couple of years for Greta and stuff. And I, similar to you, I wrote one of my daily blogs and just wrote about this brings me hope. So My wrap is that, let's be vulnerable. Vulnerability is a strength. Let's be authentic in who we are. Let's simply show up. And if humans bring their whole human self, there is lots of hope. So.
And this status quo is hanging on by a thread right now, which is a good thing.
Yeah, exactly. So thank you so much thank you just for being you, Catherine, and for showing up.
Thank you, Tom. Thanks for having me. It was a pleasure.
Cheers.